Hello and welcome back to Published. This is episode 18, and today we're speaking with Corinne Foster, Director of Marketing and Branding at Greenleaf Book Group, about how to launch a blog.
Welcome to Published, a podcast by Greenleaf Book Group, where we'll discuss the ins and outs of the publishing industry, from writing a book and finding the right publisher, to gearing up for a book launch. And now, here's your host, Greenleaf Book Group CEO, Tanya Hall.
Welcome to Published, everyone. We sent out a call for episode requests on our Twitter and newsletter earlier this year, and we've got some great content planned for you coming up. So hopefully we'll be able to answer all of your burning questions about writing a book and building a brand to support that book. And speaking of that, today we are so lucky to pick the brain of Corinne Foster about the world of blogging. Corinne is, as she puts it, a recovering blogger herself, and she'll talk about her long run as a blogger. But she also leads the team here at Greenleaf that helps authors to build their author platforms. And a blog is, of course, a big component of that platform quite often. On top of being a rock star here at Greenleaf, Corinne has an MBA from Indiana University and completed the Yale Publishing course. She's a 2015 Publishers Weekly Star Watch honoree, obviously no slouch, and she has got her finger on the pulse in the world of book marketing. So we're very excited to have her and ask her all about why authors should consider blogging and then how they can launch one successfully. Corinne, welcome to Published.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do here at Greenleaf?
Sure. So I'm the Director of Marketing and Branding here at Greenleaf. My team works in two capacities that are very closely aligned. The first is working with authors on their branding initiatives, and that involves determining their target market for the book, messaging for the book and their brand as a whole, and then strategizing how they're going to reach those readers and really build a platform and monetize that platform. The other half of my team works on book-specific marketing initiatives around the launch of the book. So lots of advertising, seeding promotions and getting reviews for the book to build that buzz. And then I also do a lot of consulting with authors focused on how they can build out their social media and their blog.
Okay. And speaking of that, of course, that question comes up all the time with authors in terms of why do I need a blog? Why should I consider it? What's the benefit? So what would you say to somebody who is in that boat and they're considering a blog and they're not quite sure what the benefit might be for them?
Yeah, it's a great question. There's a lot to consider, and authors are busy, so they want to make sure that this is a good use of their time. So there's quite a few benefits that we run through when we're considering where to blog, when to blog. Big part of that is content ownership and control of the messaging. It gives them an outlet to bring their brand to their followers in a way that is very clear and concise and consistent. They can reach their readers on a regular basis and walk them through concepts and really provide additional value outside of the book. It also, for SEO purposes, it builds inbound links to the blog and authority so that when people are looking for an expert on a certain topic, that author and expert's website is going to come up to the top of the search results. Mm-hmm. Blogs are fresh content for Google, and Google loves freshly updated and consistently updated websites for their search results and for how they connect people that are searching with keywords to the content. So that's always really good, and it pings Google every time that an author updates their blog. It also allows an author to connect to current events and expand on topics. We call that newsjacking a lot of the time, where something hits the news and it's a big topic and everybody is searching for more information. And an author has a certain take on it and a certain expertise that allows them to speak to a dimension of that. And a blog allows them to react really, really quickly and get content up and out there so that they're a resource for people looking for more information. And for a lot of authors, the biggest reason to start a blog is that it humanizes their brand. They're constantly talking and engaging and welcoming conversation in the comments of a blog.
Yeah, it really is a chance to bring that authenticity into how they interact with an audience. And one other point that I often make to people is that you can use the blog as a bit of R&D, really. It's your research and development lab, mm-hmm. and a great way for people who aren't quite sure if their content holds water or might have a market to figure out, is there a reaction? Do people start commenting and sharing? And maybe there's one aspect of your what you thought was your expertise that really resonates, and that maybe is the path that you should pursue more heavily. So I'm big on using it in that capacity as well. And that's not just for people who are starting to write their book, but even if you've already written one and you're considering the next book or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Okay, so let's assume, though, that our listeners do have a book, and what should they then write about? Is the blog, certainly it has to be fresh content, as you said, so they've already put their blood, sweat, and tears and a lot of their time into writing the book. So what should they and what can they write about on a blog?
So that's a really common question, and authors struggle with that, especially as first-time bloggers. And I think that's because there's so much they can blog about that they can't focus in on it. I always tell authors that if you have a book, I can guarantee you I can make 6 to 12 months worth of blog topics out of it. You can pull out chunks from each chapter, and we call that content mapping. When you go through existing material, you pull out those gems, and you make notes of where you can add more value, give more examples that maybe the book didn't allow you the space to really dive deeper into a topic. Another great place for an author to start is 101 level content. Assume that your reader knows nothing about what your expertise is in besides a general curiosity. Not only does that make it really easy to build on topics, but as you're building, you can link back to previous topics, and it's really great for SEO to have those inbound links to yourself in a blog post.
So in terms of the content chunking, can we give the audience any specific guidelines in terms of what they're looking for so that something would qualify to be used in that way?
Yeah, so I think main ideas are great out of each chapter of a book, can make for great blog content. Always looking where you can link to other people. Is there a topic in your book, again, that relates to something in the news, where you can lay out the parameters of a certain topic, weigh in, and then link to how this is relating to other people?
Mm-hmm, that makes sense. So the other big question that we get all the time, I'm kind of laughing because you know darn well how often it comes up. So when it comes to keywords, people just really get obsessed with trying to stuff as many keywords as they can into their blog, sometimes, of course, at the expense of the content. Yeah. So any tips for keyword research and or how important that should be as you go about writing?
Yeah, so first, we always recommend that authors build their website on the WordPress platform. It's the most widely used blogging platform out there, and it has a lot of flexibility in terms of design and plugins. And one of those plugins is Yoast. It's Y-O-A-S-T. And what that plugin does is it allows you to SEO optimize individual pages and blog posts within a website. So it will very easily tell you on a red, yellow, and green light scale where you are on optimization. It takes into consideration things like keyword use and frequency, the reading level of the blog post, the length of the blog post. And I found it really helpful in that as you're using the plugin and it's telling you what to fix, you're learning about SEO optimization. So after you use that plugin for a period of time, you're gonna naturally write your blog post in a way that's SEO optimized. Google recently has made some changes into how they deliver search results, and they're actually penalizing websites if they try to force too many keywords in there. So you wanna be really conversational and use keywords really organically within posts, and that plugin helps you do it.
Mm-hmm. Yoast, so like toast with a Y.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, good. And in terms of frequency, you mentioned frequency of keywords, but how about frequency of the posts themselves? I've heard lots of different recommendations on that front as far as how often you have to post for it to even have any relevance in terms of search or to keep your audience happy. So what are your recommendations on that front?
So I'm much more concerned with consistency than I am frequency. I would prefer an author or an expert to sustain a lower level of higher quality post for a longer duration of time, authors tend to get overzealous. They launch this blog, they want to have an archive, they want to have two or three posts a week, and it's just not a level of content they can sustain, and they either burn out before their book is published or shortly thereafter. And that's the point that you least want to have the burnout hit, because you're now cultivating a following and people are coming to you for more and more content and you're kind of bailing on them. Mm-hmm. So all that being said, there are some Google guidelines. You really should try to blog once a week. I always recommend aiming for the same day and time every week, because that consistency will allow your followers to start seeking you out at very specific times. I blogged for almost 15 years, and I blogged on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule for many of those years. And I could see my blog traffic spike even before I promoted a blog post on social media. Monday morning at 8 o'clock, people started visiting the site. So that consistency really brings people back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the little tagline you've given yourself, a recovering blogger.
Yes, recovering blogger. Had to take a little break, but I still can talk about it all day long.
Yeah, well, understood. That was quite the run you had there. Okay, so speaking of promoting new posts, obviously that's a very important part of anything you write being seen. So what are some best practices on promoting posts?
So your social media is your number one way you're going to promote your post. And I like to think of it as a carousel of content. You have your blog post at the hub of that. And what's going to keep that carousel moving is how often the post is shared and with who that post is shared with. So I created a checklist. And after I published a blog post, it shared on my main social media channels with different intro copy, because you want to tailor it not only to the social network, but with the assumption that some people are following you multiple places. So you don't want to be redundant for those people. Also, share multiple times. Share as soon as it publishes, share later that day, share in the middle of the night for the night owls or people in different time zones. You can also recycle content as well. So there are, again, if you're using WordPress, there are plugins that shares posts from the archive. You can set the schedule, you can select which posts are included in that sharing. And then again, the newsjacking angle. If something hits the news that you have some expertise on and you have a blog post about it, you don't need to write a new blog post. You can pick that blog post up from the archives and reshare it with people.
Yeah, and perhaps add a little context at the mm-hmm. top to frame why it's tied to this current event.
Absolutely.
Newsjacking, yes, a new word for an age-old practice. So you mentioned earlier WordPress being at least your go-to recommendation for somebody just starting a blog. Are there other options they should consider, or what should they look for if they're starting from scratch?
Yeah, there's lots of platforms out there now for blogging. There's free and paid ones. Squarespace is probably the one most people have heard of, especially if they listen to podcasts. They seem to sponsor just about everyone out there. The reason why I like WordPress is because of ownership of content and ease of use, and there's lots of developers out there. That being said, it may not be the right fit for everyone. My number one recommendation is to look at the TOS, the terms of service, of whatever blogging platform you're going to use, and make sure you're clear on who owns that content after you upload it to the site. Where can they share it and what can they do with it? Also look into downtimes for certain website hosts. You want to make sure you're partnering with a host where your content is going to be available 99% of the time to people searching and clicking over from marketing materials or your URL on the back of the book cover. So there's just some considerations, but there's a lot of good options on there depending on what your use is for it.
Mm-hmm. That makes me think of something else that comes up with our authors from time to time. Myself included, those of us who blog for publications like Inc. or Forbes, obviously we're driving our readers to their website, and there are some that's stupid in many cases. So when you're talking to an author who has that opportunity in front of them, how do you walk them through that choice, whether they blog on their own site or take advantage of a pre-existing audience built on the back of Forbes or Inc.
Yeah, it's a lot of it is who has the upper hand in terms of audience size. If you're looking to build an audience, that's a great portal into a group of people who are expecting content like you deliver, are looking for your expertise. The great part of those columns and those pieces are that they'll link back to either your website or your book, or there's some kind of source that can drive them back to your website. You can also kind of complete that loop too. Say when you post an article on Inc., you could then go to your blog the same day, write an intro paragraph, and then say to read the entire article, click on over to Inc. So you have something on your website with some intro and some keywords and then a link over to Inc. so that when you're promoting the article, you can promote a link to your website. Link to you first, then link to Inc.
Yeah, good advice. Okay. And then the elephant in the room, and writing for Inc., I can tell you that time is the biggest challenge. And most of our listeners are not full-time writers, so everyone's juggling jobs and families and life. So talk to us a little bit about reasonable expectations, I suppose, around blogging and the time commitment involved, and what should they carve out to make room for this?
So a lot of that just depends on your writing speed and how comfortable you are with sharing content. Definitely create a content calendar, an editorial calendar first. Know and map out what you're going to write about, because I think that does make it easier in terms of I have one blog post to write in the next week, not 32 to write before my publication date. So it lets you take it in bite-sized pieces. And then from there, I would say most people to write a blog post and optimize it, maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours when you first start, and then you'll pick up steam from there. Another thing to take advantage of is repurposing content and that content mapping. Again, you don't have to write everything from scratch. You can update material, you can provide fresh examples to support a position that you've taken in the past. So always think about repurposing and using the material that you have on hand.
Okay, good. And being marketers, obviously a top priority for us if we're creating all of this stuff to find an audience and connect with them is to somehow capture those people. And I think that's another bit of pushback that I hear sometimes when someone is considering a blog. It's like, oh, get them to my site and then what? So what are the best practices there in terms of capturing that audience and converting them a little deeper down the funnel?
Yeah, so on every page of your website, you should have an opt-in to your email list. That's kind of the golden ticket for a lot of authors is building an opt-in list, because then you can activate that group and market to them in the future. You have a captive audience, essentially. You also want to make sure that your social media links are present on your site so that if someone wants kind of bite-sized information from you on an ongoing basis and you have the ability to drive them back to your blog in the future, they can follow you at their preferred network and read your content kind of at their own pace. And the big one too is at every blog post, you want to include a call to action, whether that is, do you like this content? Great, subscribe to get these blog posts directly to your inbox. Or it can be asking a question so that they leave a comment, and then you can use a plugin to opt people into your email list from a comment on your blog as well.
Okay, good advice. Excellent. Corinne, anything else you want to share with people considering starting a blog?
Just take it slow. No one is out there monitoring how often you're blogging or kind of policing what you're doing.
Well, your marketing manager at Greenleaf might be.
I might be keeping an eye on it and giving some suggestions. But just try it. I mean, you're going to get feedback from people, and it's usually going to be good. They're going to tell you what they like to hear and what they want to read about. So then you can start creating content that fulfills that need for them. The blogging world is very welcoming. People love to interact on blog comments, and bloggers really support each other. So no matter where, what platform you're blogging on or when you start, there's always a community that's going to support you.
Yeah, good to hear. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this episode of Published. Stay tuned for more episodes coming up. And remember that the best way to be reminded of new episodes is by subscribing on iTunes. Remember that notes from today's show can be found at greenleafbookgroup.com/episode 18.
Thanks for listening to Published. To learn more, please visit greenleafbookgroup.com. And remember to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.